Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 121, Interview with Kelly Kegwin. Kelly is a professional artist working in collage, ceramics, and photography, infusing everything she does with humanity and storytelling. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, we talk about what she requires of her artwork, the stories behind several of her projects, the evolution of fear in her life and work, and what motivates her to create art. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/121. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/121. By doing so, you'll receive my two latest guides, DIY Documentary and Build Your Platform, as well as weekly inspiration and ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Kelly? Cue the transitional music. Kelly, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
My name's Kelly, and I'm an artist. I have been working probably since the mid-80s when I was in high school. I started painting, and since then I've gone on to work in multiple mediums. I'm probably mostly known for ceramics, mixed media arts, and photography. And beyond that, I'm a cancer survivor. I love animals. We're into urban farming. I'm an advocate not only for people who aren't for themselves, you know, with having to do with cancer, but with other things in life and animals. And that's pretty much who I am. It's pretty simple, and it's all kind of intertwined between my what I do and what I make, what I create.
That's cool. I remember in the Open Studios booklet, I think there was something about the studio that you share with your wife, and I think all of the animals, and just be prepared for rain or shine, this cross-section of art and animals. And I remember that.
Yes, we always tell people, because I have one friend in particular who is fearful of birds and nature-y things. And so we always have to make sure that, because we have a pet turkey, and she's very sweet, but if you are scared of such things, she will walk right up to you, and our chickens will as well. So we always tell people, when you come to the farm, if we're doing a kind of an open studio event, we will keep them contained the best we can, but they'll be here, and there's cats and dogs and all kinds of things.
That's awesome.
It's definitely part of the package.
Do your animals have a recurring theme in a lot of your artwork?
They do. The ceramics really started with the chickens. I started playing around with clay because my wife has been making pottery for quite a while. And I would use the extra clay and just start making these weird little birds and chickens. And then it went from there to where I said, well, I wonder if I could draw a chicken on a mug or on a cup. And so we did that. And then it kind of grew from there to where now it's a full cast of characters from our life, like dogs, cats, chickens, and all that. And then also, of course, unicorns and Bigfoot and dinosaurs and things that we don't have as pets, but that are still awesome.
If you could have any fictional creature as a pet, what would it be?
Unicorn.
Unicorn?
Yeah, although unicorns are real, so it's not really fictional. Just kidding.
What?
Just kidding. I know. I have one in my backyard right now.
So one of the things that I love as I was looking at your website is the names of your projects, because they speak to a depth of experience and of struggle and a celebration of life. And it just, the question that I had as I'm reading this is like, what do you require of your artwork?
I really don't have, it's funny. It just all kind of comes out of me in terms of, I'll have an idea and I just say, what will happen if I try that? And it's really kind of been my whole life. But in terms of a common theme, it really is about connection. So I've studied the human condition. I've studied sociology when I was in college and psychology. And so a lot of it for me really has to do with relationships and interconnectivity, how we, like the good things, the bad things, just really kind of reflecting that experience and just how we're all kind of interconnected. And so whether it's something having to do with looking at the journey of cancer, or it has to do with drawing silly, you know, like a dinosaur is giving a heart to a unicorn on a mug. It really, it's just all having to do with reflecting connection. Mm. And that's just where it all comes from with me, where everything kind of originates.
When you're dealing with the human condition, you know, obviously I think we live in an era where we don't necessarily know how to handle the bad things of life. And so we tend to put on these fake personas of goodness and happiness and fake joy. So how do we make room for the things that are difficult?
It's been an interesting journey, and that's actually something not that I get asked that a lot, but there are a lot of people who, it's very common, especially with cancer, that people will say, "You're such an inspiration, you're so brave, you know, you give people hope," those things, which are wonderful. But a lot of it just comes from getting that kind of glimpse into, we're not here forever, and we have this one experience. And so do you want to be that fake persona? Do you want to be on Facebook showing a life that you're not really living? Which, let's be honest, that's what a lot of people, they get upset. They go on social media, they see people living these lives, but in reality, behind the scenes, that person is not happy, or their marriage is not happy. I hear that from people a lot too, where they say, "Oh, this happened to me," and then all my friends couldn't handle it because then they realized their relationships weren't like they saw, you know, you see it on a social media blip. You see a photo on Instagram or a vacation and you say, well, is that real life? It is part of your life, but in reality, we're so much more than that. Mm-hmm. So I think to me, it really came down to that choice of, as I've gotten older, I mean, I'm 50 years old now, and then having the last, say, 3 years of dealing through cancer, working through cancer, it's like, what do I want to put out in the world? Who do I want to be? I really want to be happy. I've lived a long enough life to have been chasing that. Mm-hmm. I've been that person for so many years chasing it. And then I finally came down to, do I really care if I have the latest television? Do I really care if I can wear, you know, like when I was a kid, wearing Jordache jeans, or, you know, the 80s, the height, like whatever the height of fashion is. And you kind of go, okay, I was always the fat kid and I couldn't wear it, so I felt horrible about myself. Mm. I've lived my life that way, saying, well, if I just could do this, if I could just lose more weight, if I could just have that car, if I could just make that person like me, then I'll be happy. And so it came down to, okay, you're looking at this really serious, horrible thing. So let's get real. And that was a huge shift for me over the last 3 years. But even before that, I started to move in that direction of just kind of downsizing things and prioritizing and not saying, I'm going to go into debt so that I can wear this certain watch. I mean, really, at the end of the day, who cares if I'm wearing a certain pair of jeans? I'm like, I'm wearing some clearance jeans from Old Navy. It's all good. And so the happiness, it really does come from in us and learning to be happy with what we have. So I talk a lot about gratitude, and that's been a big one for me. It encompasses everything in my life, from the artwork to my relationships, and being able to say, I have a roof over my head. I have food to eat. I have people who love me. I don't need to be driving that car. I don't care if I'm seen at this club, or if I weigh 5 more pounds than I did 2 weeks ago. Those are the things that really bring us down. So for me, it's just the whole picture of looking at that has just helped me create this joy that I see lacking now in so many people. And so if I can put that out there and reflect that, whether it's artwork or in my life, that's where I'm at.
As you're talking, you know, I'm looking at the questions that I sent you, and I keep staring at the phrase, "You are enough." Is that kind of the story behind that project, or is there more to that story?
It's it's pretty much where that comes from is, I mean, for me, you know, we're all born and yes, you're a perfect baby, hopefully. But then as soon as you hit society, the expectations, like that's been a huge thing I've been looking at is expectations. So we're expected to be this and that, and we're never good enough. Like we're never talented enough. We're never pretty enough. We're never thin enough. We're never good looking enough. All of these things where people say, well, you're just not enough of that, when in reality, whatever we are is enough. Mm. Like you're enough. You don't need to be chasing that thing. And so we have a society where advertising companies tell us, well, if you drink this beer, if you get this whatever, if you have this liposuction, I mean, I can't even tell you some of the commercials I see on some of the side cable channels where I'm just like, wow, okay. If you just do these things, then people will love you. And in reality, if we broke down those walls and we actually just started seeing each other as we are and not having that, you know, oh, he's too short. Oh, she's too fat. Oh, I really wanted someone that looks like this Photoshopped image I saw, which does not exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like Heidi Klum is hot. You look at her and you go, she's gorgeous, beautiful woman. She's funny. But at the end of the day, for us to all expect you need to be Heidi Klum, I mean, we're all different. And that once we embrace that, that's when we start getting happy and figuring out where we're at. And so the whole idea of you are enough, it's like, we really are. Like, you want to do this thing with your life, do it. Like, things are always holding us back. And we always say, if I could just this, then I could that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it just became if I'm going to have a disease that's possibly going to take any more opportunities from me, like, what am I waiting for? So why am I letting an advertising company tell me I'm not good enough to have these things that I want or to feel good or be happy? Yeah, it's just really embracing all of that. And it's kind of shifted into even from you are enough, which I'm happy to use that hashtag and tell people that all the time. It's like, I am enough. So, you know, for me, that's also tying into work I'm doing. It's just like me saying I am enough. You know, because there's the days where it doesn't matter. I still have days. Just the other day, I got in one of those funks where I went to, you know, go see my oncologist. And you're just like, oh, you know, dude, I've got to get out of this mindset. And so it's taken me, you know, 2 days to get out of that and just really be like, okay, it happens to us all. We all get in that place. But honestly, the only way to really make the world a happy place is if we can all kind of start moving past that and accepting people how they are, and just because we're all beautiful, and it's like we're all just perfect how we are. Mm-hmm. and that's really the key that we're lacking right now.
Yeah. I like how you not only frame it for, you know, our lives are enough, but you're making that transition to your work is enough, it sounds like, as well. So it's like, you know, you're finding that joy in your artwork as well.
Yes. And it is, for me, it's all the same thing. My life, my work, it all comes from the same place. And so for me, that is it. It's being enough and not having to, I know so many artists who say, well, I'll show my work at some point, and right now I'm keeping it all to myself. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of go, okay, you have to show your work. You have to share your work in order to get it out there and get feedback and have people really communicate with you about it. And so that's really how you grow as an artist as well. So as a person and as an artist, it's really about kind of putting yourself out there. And we all have this fear, whether it's you want to ask someone out or whether it's I really want somebody that I respect to look at my work. All of that ties together. And so, yeah, the fear thing is big. It's a big one. And it all goes back to that again, that putting yourself out there, and it sucks. You know, we all know with our work, there's always going to be people who hate what we do that like can't get past anything and have to say, oh, well, I could do that. I mean, I've had that. Oh my gosh. I've had that for so many years for people just like, or even now we've had people come and look at the pottery and they say to their kid, oh, let's go home and make that. And you know, I just say, well, you know, have fun with that. Yeah. Because that's just how it is. Or there's going to be the people who they want serious pottery, you know, that's very serious and different traditions. They want Japanese tea bowls. They want things that are very traditional, that tie back into things. They don't want bright colored mugs that have narwhals and, you know, chickens on them. And I completely respect that. Yeah. You know, so at the end of the day, you just have to say not everybody is going to love everybody or what they create.
Yeah. You mentioned fear, and you have a blog called Fear is a Four-Letter Word, which is a fabulous name for a blog. And fear is a topic that I am constantly immersing myself in because I think there's so much, I think there can be so much fear in the creative life. So for you, what has been your fear journey?
Yeah, you know, it's that thing where I'm kind of like, I talk about being 50, you know, it goes back to that thing of, I mean, I've gone the whole, I'm getting ready to talk and write more. I'm doing a whole project that has to do with my growing up, like the fear of being a disappointment, that whole thing of just fearing what other people have thought of me, of not accepting me, that a whole idea, well, if I do that, they're going to make fun of me. If I do that, I'm not going to be, they're going to say, oh, you're not good enough. They're not going to love me. I'm not going to find anybody who accepts what I'm thinking or what I'm doing or what I look like or any of those things. So for me, it all really ties back to my childhood and being a fat kid. And it's like, okay, I was the girl who was not girly enough for my mom. I was not thin enough. I was not this. I was not that. And it just kind of has been this lifetime of overcoming that, of being able to feel like I can walk in a room and have people like me and me not have to worry about, you know, oh, that person's thinking this about me. Because, you know, we're all thinking, oh, I have this fear that this person is thinking this of me or they're going to reject me. That's a huge one, is they're going to reject me if I say what I think, or they're going to reject me if I talk about being fat, they're going to make fun of me. And so for me, it's been a lifelong struggle and it's affected pretty much every part of my life. So now I've gradually, with the help of my wife is a huge influence, having someone come along who says, I accept you as you are. I don't care about, you know, I just want you to be healthy. Yeah. I don't care. I love the whole package. That was a huge thing for me. And so we've actually been doing over the years, different photo shoots here and there where like we went to the coast during the winter and she has no fear of just taking her clothes off and being nude. And it's like, that to me was crazy. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm with someone who will just, if she wants to go jump in the water or whatever, we'll just take her clothes off and doesn't care. So it's rubbed off on me now where we've gone and done some photo shoots that were, you know, partially nude or nude photos that are just beautiful ones. And I just kept thinking, like this time around through cancer, what are the things that I haven't really, I've talked about a lot of this and I've talked about the weight issue, but I haven't really done all of it. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, I'm getting ready to just launch the new work that's going to have to do with that. So last year, when I had the reoccurrence of my cancer, my doctor said, he actually said the words, I don't know that I can cure this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know that I can do it. And that was that moment of like, wow, okay, this is it. So I went home and sat with it for a while and I thought, well, if there's one thing that I can do, like let's say I have time enough to do like one last big project, this is the project that came. And yeah, so I don't want to talk too much about it, but I'm getting ready to launch it. And I already know there's going to be social media people who love it and there's going to be people who hate it. Yeah. There's going to be people who say horrible things about me and there's going to be people who go back to that like, this is so brave, this is such an inspiration. And for me, I'm to the point now where I don't care because this is like you stare down death and you honestly say, I'm going to say what I have to say and my voice matters. And I know people will resonate with it. I mean, whether it's on the level of facing your fear or just letting it all, you know, putting it all out there, whatever it is, we need more of that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if I can be a catalyst in some way and the people who've helped me to get to this point, then that's the work that I'm going to do. Fear is a four-letter word just started as a way where I could start writing many years ago about facing things and getting over things. And then cancer came and it became really documenting that journey. And now it's getting ready to shift into that as well. So, which we're going to see where it goes, because I know there's been talk about a book, there's been talk about other things. I don't know what's coming, but I do know this project is happening. So I'm excited.
That's cool. It, as you share your fear journey too, it, I imagine that when you face probably, I think, the scariest thing for any of us to face, fear changes at that moment, I imagine.
It does. And it just becomes a thing now where, I mean, at least for me, I do know some people who are living in that fear space and they can't let go of it, because I work with a lot of people with cancer now. For me, it's became more of a, I'm not afraid to die. I honestly am not afraid to die. I have more of a fear of not accomplishing what I want to before I die. So it's become very defined for me, which is interesting, because if you had asked me 10 years ago, you know, how would you feel about death? I wouldn't have said, well, I fully accept it's going to happen. I don't know how or when, but instead it really focused on the things I hadn't said yet and really having a purpose. So for me, a lot of things have come back to what is my purpose of being here? And I think that drives my battle with cancer in terms of that. Like, I feel I have purpose, which also gives me hope, which also helps me say, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
So it's all tied together.
Yeah. Well, and just that drive to know that you're not done yet. I mean, that's powerful.
Yes, it really is. And when you can kind of get into that headspace, it also helps redefine all of those other things where you say, the commercial on TV says I need liposuction. This over here tells me I need, everybody's telling you what you need.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm just like, I know what I need. I know what I don't need. And it really simplifies life. Mm. And so for me, it's just, I just need to stay in the space that I'm in and take care of myself. And I have the people that I love. I have the best support system I could ever hope for. And I have all of these things to look forward to. And I'm constantly creating out of that. And so it really is all tied together. It's like that thing where we go back to talking about connection. Like, it's all connected, which I love.
Yeah. Well, and at that point, since it is so connected, you can't compartmentalize and separate and, you know, be like, okay, I'm going to be an artist today and then I'm going to be this tomorrow. I mean, you are all of these things at all times, it sounds like.
Yes, I've come to that realization that I am my art. Mm-hmm. And it's all, like I say, it is all tied together. Whether like this last year, one of the gals at the oncology office gifted me a unicorn onesie, which I thought was amazing. And so I went in and I changed and I put it on, and then everybody loved it so much. I was like, well, I'm going to wear it every time I come in. Well, it became this thing where nurses were coming up to me and saying, you know, I had this patient and they were just at the end of their rope. They were having the worst day. And they just said, there's nothing whatsoever, like nothing is giving me hope right now. And that right at that moment, I would walk in the room and they'd see this person in a unicorn onesie and it would make them smile. And so I had enough of those moments that I just said, this, like, it almost is a performance art. Yeah. It's me, but it's impacting other people. So it really is what I'm doing in my daily life. Like, what you're doing in your daily life can impact people in ways you don't even see it. Like, I wouldn't have even known it if they hadn't told me. But it's really crazy when you start to kind of look at your life that way and say, what I do, even though I don't know about it, is impacting people, whether it can be negative or it can be positive. Mm-hmm. It really just kind of pushes me to do more positive things and put more positive stuff out there. Because, you know, even if you don't hear back from people, it's impacting people.
Yeah. So would you classify that as love is a radical act, your project?
Love is a radical act is something my wife started. She gets full credit. So it's actually a project where we started making these little hearts, and we would go out and do what they call a heart bombing instead of an art bombing. So we would go out into a public place and hang these, like, you know, say take 50 or so hearts and hang them in trees in an area or on fences or in front of buildings. And then people started wanting to join in with us and do it, which was really fun. And so we would do them as like, oh, we're going to meet at this place and go do this. And so it's really just a thing to put something out in society that's a moment of positivity that people see it. And they do. It's very unexpected. And it's just this beautiful thing where we've had people email us and say, I was having a horrible day. I was walking out of a whatever building, and here's all these hearts. And it totally changed my day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that started however many years ago. And we've been doing it on an ongoing basis. We've kind of taken a break for a little bit with everything that's been going on with me. But it's such an impactful project. It'll never go away. We'll always keep doing it. And we have people who will ask us to, like, send them an envelope full of hearts, and they'll go do their own. Mm-hmm. So it's a really cool thing that you can go out and just take a simple action like that and impact all these people that you maybe don't even know, or you never hear back from them, but you honestly are putting good out in the world. So the unicorn onesie, love is a radical act. Those are things that honestly you just do it, and you know, you don't know the ripple effect you're having, but if you're lucky, people will actually tell you. They'll come back and tell you at some point, and you're just like, oh man, that's amazing. But even if it's one person, you've impacted one person's life.
Yeah. Have you ever had those moments where people express skepticism of love only to embrace it later on?
We have had some people we know who have come back and told us that they either had a bad relationship or had just really were doubtful of getting in another relationship. And, you know, sometimes it has to do with an action. And we also had that come back from people who kind of had been watching us. And then when we were able to get married, when marriage equality passed, that was a big one where we had people who were so overwhelmed with the fact that we couldn't be married, but then we were able to be married, that flow, I think people really saw that as just this amazing thing. And so we did have a few people who said, you know, I just never thought that I would get involved again, or I would ever think about getting married again. And the skepticism of love it's a hard one, because honestly, when we go back to that, it's like, there's so many people in our society who've been hurt or who are lonely, and they just don't know how to get back to that place. Mm-hmm. It really is just, I know it sounds very, rainbows and like talking about rainbows and unicorns, but like really every time somebody does an act of kindness, every time somebody goes up and asks a stranger, you know, how are you doing? Or you see someone struggling and you say, what can I do for you? Is there anything I can do for you? Or you offer to buy somebody's meal, or you even just buying a coffee for the person behind you. Those are the things that reaffirm faith in humanity. And I think that's the bigger picture of honestly getting people over that skepticism. So they can see us. And like I said, we've had a couple people who've said that inspired them. But at the end of the day, it's a much bigger picture where I think if we keep all doing those random acts of kindness, that every time we do that, it helps somebody.
Yeah. So you give your wife all credit for Love is a Radical Act. What's it like to create artwork with your wife?
It's a interesting experience. So it's collaborative in the beginning, because we both were strong artists in our own right. It was kind of a struggle to make it into one, because, you know, there's ego involved. Anybody, I don't care who it is, there's ego involved. There's certain, like, well, what are you going to do? And what's your part going to be? And what's my part going to be? And who gets credit for things? That now, as long as we're both getting credit, that's really all that matters. Mm-hmm. And so we both make sure that we say, you know, like Sam did, she created Love is a Radical Act. I just was the helper, you know, and then there's other things that I do that she's the helper, like with the new project I'm doing, or like doing the photography things where she's actually the photographer, but I'm doing the concept. So it can be stressful. It can be beautiful. It's something I really don't know. I could see a lot of couples having issues with it. Because you really have got to be able to talk things out. Like, yes. If you cannot communicate in your relationship as it is, you will go down in flames. Because we have a lot of times where we have to stop and say, okay, we need to sit and talk about these things, and we sit and talk about stuff, and then we're back on the same page. But that's kind of how our relationship is we're very open communication-wise and very good at articulating what's wrong or what's right, what we're feeling. So that's one thing I will say is it's great, and I actually – we have some other couples that we have as friends who have studios together. So it's really awesome to see it. But like I say, it's definitely something that I'm like, communication. You've got to be able to have that communication and be able to keep the ego out of it, because that's the key right there. Otherwise everything will just go up in flames.
Yeah. One of the interesting things as you're talking and telling your stories is that you have a wide range of not only artistic interests, but just, I'll call them life interests, you know, urban farming and animals and all that. So do you ever struggle with which medium to work in or what you want to be remembered and known for?
So when it comes to different mediums, I don't really struggle with which things to work in. It's more everything for me is about the idea and the concept, and then the intent of what do I want to convey, how do I want to convey it, and what really works the best for communicating that. So the pottery is really wonderful for a lot of things that are joyful, kind of simplistic, because the drawings really are simple and happy and colorful. Mm-hmm. But I will lean into mixed media or photography for things that have a deeper meaning or things that are documenting, showing experiences that, you know, whether it's me, myself, or something else in society, those things really work better with that. And a lot of it I can incorporate text, which is one of my favorite things as well. Yeah. So whether it's writing with imagery or whether it's imagery that has text incorporated in it, for an entire message, those really are the two that speak to that. So they're more socially significant. I really don't struggle too much with what I'm known for or what I would be remembered for. I do know the mixed media work I do with plexiglass is something I'm the only person doing it the way that I do it, and therefore people tend to ask me how I do it. And so it's an interesting thing where people love it, and then they want to know how I do it, which, since it's something that I experimented with and kind of came up with on my own, I haven't told people, you know, how I do it yet. I mean, they can guess and they can try it. That's great. For right now, it's basically mine, and it's something special that down the road I may teach classes and how to do it, but it's such a special thing for me, and I love the way that I work with the medium, and it's being mostly a recycled also medium is really, really fun for me. And like I said, whatever I'm known for, I actually hope I'm known more for the messages that I convey more than actually the mediums that I work in, although the art world is fickle, and they do want you to choose one. Like, if you want to go get an MFA, you have to have one thing that you do, whether it's ceramics or photography, whatever. But it's hard. It's like for me choosing between children.
Yeah.
And it's just, one is a little more joyful, one is a little more serious, and, you know, and then the writing, it's its own creation. So I will always write as well. So I can't choose just one.
I completely respect that too, because I think I'm drawn to people that have worked through the struggle of saying, you know what, I'm not going to pick one. I'm just going to do it. Whatever makes me happy.
Right. And, you know, and there's people out there that are so gifted in one medium. Like, you know, there's certain photographers and certain potters that I really admire their work. And that's amazing. I just, for me, it happens to be how I work is just a kind of across the board. So, you know, I'm just a whatever works best for you person. It's like there's no right or wrong in my world.
That's awesome. So I've met you through mutual friends. One of the things that's interesting is, like, you're known in the community. And so I thought I'd ask you, what does community mean to you?
community to me, it really means, at least the community that we have here, which I love, it's support. I've never been a part of anything where I felt so supported. And then, of course, that ties back into connection, which I'm always talking about. Mm-hmm. The fact that there's so many people who we're all kind of connected through, like the 6 degrees of separation, whatever you want to call it, where there'll be like that, oh, you must know this person. And then that person knows that person. And then how we're all really, even if we haven't met, we're still connected. It's an amazing thing. And to me, it's really, we all choose to invest in our community and supporting each other and like our small businesses and our artists and our writers. It's just something I've never found any other place I've lived. Mm-hmm. For me, that really defines community. And, you know, we use the word community a lot. It's just like, even in, you know, the LGBTQ community, mm-hmm. I have not found that solidified community that we have here, at least in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's almost like a family vibe, mm-hmm. which is really cool that we have this thing where we show up to each other's events. We buy, like, people buy our pottery as gifts to support us. And then we hire them like as insurance agents or whatever they do. It's really cool that we all find our ways to support one another and show up.
That's cool. Just a couple more questions. I've had a great time just listening to you share about your life and your work and how they're interconnected. And one of the things that's always fascinating to me is books that have impacted other people's lives. So is there a book that has greatly impacted your life?
I used to be a really voracious reader. Probably one book that has kind of been not only influential, but changing my life in a certain way is Dear Dad, which was written by Louis Anderson. And it has nothing to do with art. It just, at the time that I read it in my life, it's something where he sat down and basically wrote letters to his dad, who had been basically an abusive alcoholic dad. And he took this journey of sitting down and just kind of writing, you know, Dear Dad letters. Mm-hmm. And he put this book together. And so that was the first time I'd ever really seen somebody kind of be vulnerable in that way, where it was just like, oh, wow, you know, he's doing this thing and he's this comedian, but here's this whole other side of him being vulnerable, mm-hmm. and in effect, you know, with his family and his upbringing and addressing things like that. And the fact that that book then led to he and I, you know, kind of continuing on this off on and off friendship of sorts since then to today, which, you know, now it's just an interesting thing to kind of, I've watched him grow mm-hmm. from that point and how I've grown from that point to where now, you know, we're older, and then that influences me, the whole thing of change and vulnerability. And so beyond that, I mean, the other person who speaks to me a lot now is Brené Brown. Mm-hmm. And so, and everything she writes about has to do with vulnerability and really letting yourself be seen and being willing to step out and just kind of say, hey, this is me, and just let it be. And to me, that ties back into what I do. And it really, it's a resonating message for me.
Mm-hmm. So what are you excited about today?
Oh, I'm excited. I mean, all the projects that are coming up. I've been working on things now for probably the last, you know, well, more than 6 months, and seeing now how things are kind of heading me down this new path. Mm-hmm. Doors are opening, and people that I've been wanting to work with are wanting to work with me, and just seeing new opportunities. And so the path that we're on with the pottery just keeps growing. And that's really a beautiful thing for Sam and I, and then also my journey. And I certainly, you know, it was never like, I'm going to write a book. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. I'm going to inspire people. I'm going to work with cancer patients. But the way that life has come together to kind of present all of this and say, here you go. This is what you're supposed to do. Now, mm-hmm. now do it. And then as I'm working on it, other doors are opening. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a really cool thing to experience. And so for me, I'm excited about whatever's coming tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I'm working on the things that I'm preparing for. And like I say, every day something new comes up and it's just really, really fun and exciting.
Yeah. So where can people look for the next project when you announce it?
Well, people could follow, I'm on Instagram, so they can find me on Instagram, both under my name and under Kig Kenzie Studio with my wife and I both. And you can follow my blog, which is where I definitely will be announcing it, which is thefearisaforletterword.org. Yeah, really, those are probably the best places to see where I'm at and what I'm doing and to connect with me. And like I said, I'm open to whatever. I'm excited to see people's feedback. And I encourage people to definitely get in touch and write and let me know what they think about what we're working on.
Awesome. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for taking time this evening to just share about your art and your life. And just thank you for being an artist and being so willing to share just the things that you go through. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast. It means so much to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work or know someone who should be on the show in 2018? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.